I kind of lit the match a little bit when in the first half hour of the show, and we've gotten some responses already. Some people not so happy, others willing to engage. I watched the Oilers last night, and the way that they won with McDavid dominating, it's sort of been a microcosm of his career so far. He does everything with Draisaitl, and they just squeak by, and it's just not particularly good enough right now. And my theory is I don't have a ton of confidence that things are going to get that much better in the next number of years. So I just feel like whether free agency in 2026, which is a long ways away, or trade, I think at some point in his career, Connor McDavid will wear a Maple Leaf uniform. Am I Mr. Sports Radio hot take guy, or do you actually think that there might be some credence to that?
You're just trying to get killed by the good people of Edmonton on social media, are you not? They love that storyline. They love when people from Toronto come out and say that eventually Connor McDavid is going to be a Maple Leaf. I agree with you in that the formula for Edmonton Oilers winning games isn't a good one. It's Rye, Draisaitl, and McDavid, and if those guys produce points, they win the game, which was the case last night, and just beautiful goals by McDavid, beautiful setup by McDavid behind the net to Archibald, and Draisaitl with a pair of really lovely assists. And I agree with you in that I don't think they've built a good enough team around him yet. I'm not so quick to write it off that he's going to demand out of there. 2026 is a long ways away. And I do think this next offseason, a lot of money comes off the books. So I think this will be a pretty critical one for Ken Holland to see what he can do in terms of building some depth around these two superstars. I think it just speaks so much about hockey being a team sport. In any other sport, if you had two drivers like McDavid and Draisaitl, league MVPs, you'd think making the playoffs would be a sure thing and contending for a championship would be a realistic thing. But they just don't have the horses. I think they're too thin on the back end, and that got exacerbated with Oscar Klefbom's injury. And I'm kind of not too happy with how they didn't address their goaltending situation. So now they got Koskinen playing every single game. We'll see here. Troy Grosnick may actually start today for the Oilers, but they're riding an average goalie, and they didn't really address such a key position. And if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm a little bit disappointed about that. But I think it's a little bit too early to put him in the blue and white just yet.
Yeah, right. Because one of the things Luca, that Josh and I were talking about was simply that, like, we exist now in the player empowerment era, right? Like, if you look across mm-hmm. sport, right? I mean, you look at what's happening in the NFL with Deshaun Watson wanting out of Houston. You look at LeBron and company going to the various teams that they've wanted to go to, baseball as well. It just, like, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, but I agree that, and maybe, again, one of the things I brought up in the first half hour of the show was simply that the cap being what it is because of COVID for the next couple of seasons probably would preclude that, but at the same time, after that, I mean, you know, McDavid's still signed with Edmonton until 2026, like we're talking about. So yeah, it just seems unlikely. It's just funny to think that even with how good McDavid and Draisaitl have been, even in a top heavy North division, Edmonton, I'm still not betting on them to make the playoffs, even as one of the top four.
No, I agree with you. I think they're going to be in a fight to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to fall off the map. I think McDavid and Draisaitl won't let that happen. But I agree with you. I think they're going to be kind of in the middle of the pack and fighting for a spot. You know, Zach Cassian called last night's game a must-win, and we're in January. Like, the season doesn't end till May. That just shows how tense it is there already. But you know, let's not crap all over them too much today. It was kind of one of the most amazing things about Connor's game was I saw him smile after that gorgeous end-to-end rush, and you seldom see that out of him in Edmonton. So hopefully this is a building block, but I agree that, you know, Ken Holland has some work to do. He has a lot of pressure. He has to build something around these two guys, because that's supposed to be the easy part. The hard part is landing superstars. The easy part should be finding a supporting cast to help prop these guys up.
Luke Fox is with us from Sportsnet.ca. So, you know, Leafs getting seven of a possible 8 points on a Alberta road trip, four games, is nothing to sneeze at. Should be very, very happy with that, especially with a break coming up right now. And, you know, there's not a lot of negatives right now, but I continue to be a little bit mystified with the way Morgan Riley has played to start the season. He hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't been great. You know, his gap control has been spotty. He's made some weird reads. Do you think it's just adjusting to another new partner who plays a lot different than anyone he's played with before in TJ Brody? Like, what do you make of what you've seen so far in the first 10 games from Riley?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think maybe people got a little bit overhyped about what Riley is. I don't think he's a true number one bona fide defenseman in that he dominates everywhere like say a Victor Hedman does. He's a really excellent offensive defenseman. He makes smart pinches most of the time. He's really dynamic as the fourth guy in or sometimes even the third guy in. He's an excellent skater, but he's a good defender, but he's not above and beyond, excellent on defending. And we've seen that he needs a solid partner, a solid blue liner with him in order to really excel. And I think part of it is him and TJ Brody figuring each other out. And I don't think they've been bad. I think they've been decent. I think one thing we have to realize with Riley is he's getting some harder matchups this year. There seems to be more of a split between the Riley-Brody pairing and the Muzzin-Hall pairing. And Muzzin-Hall pretty much got all the tough matchups last year. But now that Riley's healthy, now that there's a bit more faith in his partner, in TJ Brody, they're getting some harder matchups. So I think we're seeing sometimes them get exposed a little bit because the top lines in this North Division are really good. This is a division loaded with offense, so sometimes you're going to get beat. I don't think he's had a bad season by any means, and I think it should only get better as Brody and Riley figure each other out a little bit more.
So, Luke, since we're discussing the defensive pairings, we'll look from the top to the bottom of the D-Core. And I know they don't play together because they kind of play when the other doesn't play, but Lettinen and Dermott, right? They keep kind of yo-yoing. Like, one comes out, one goes in with the roster movements. And like, last night, I don't know, Lettinen, I was really interested. I was really high on Lettinen. The three of us talked about him a lot when he was signed and so on. It just didn't look very comfortable. Do you think the constant roster movement, like not getting necessarily a lot of playing time for either of them, is hurting one or even both of them?
I think it is hurting a little bit. It's a tough challenge, right? There was zero preseason games. Lettinen has never played on this ice surface before. He's new to the continent, trying to figure things out. And Sheldon Keefe's in a tricky spot. He wants to win the games, but at the same time, he's been charged with trying to integrate guys like Barabanov and Lettinen into the team with very little runway to do so. Because there's kind of a bit of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Hey, if you sign with our team as a free agent when there's other NHL teams that want you, we're going to guarantee you at least a chance to try and stick here. Because if Lettinen comes over and all he does is sit on the bench, that's going to ruin the Leafs' chances of recruiting European free agents in the future. And they've invested a lot in that. So it's this dance that Keith has kind of been charged with doing, not letting guys get too cold, trying to figure out where Lettinen's strengths are, trying to get him used to the North American game, but at the same time, winning the game. I think one of the most difficult things in this situation is every single game the Leafs have been in has been like a one-goal game. So you can't roll out Barabanov and play him a bunch of minutes. You can't roll out Lettinen and have him play a bunch of minutes because the game is on the line and these points are so valuable. And to be brutally honest, they haven't earned the coach's trust yet. So that's why they end up sitting on the bench. It was really interesting last night. Keith was asked about Lettinen, and he went out of his way to say that when Lettinen gets in, that's not a slight on Dermott. Travis Dermott has done everything we've asked of him. Him sitting is not a condemnation of his play. We're just trying to balance everyone in. And we haven't even brought up Rasmus Sandin, and that guy hasn't played in months.
Luke Fox is with us. Yeah, I just feel like I you're right, it's a dance. And maybe I assume the fact that the likes of Barabanov and Lehtinen are on the fourth line and the third defensive pairing, it's not to say that those aren't important roles. They certainly are. You know, we can argue the virtue and value of an effective fourth line and a third defensive pairing. But playing, you know, Barabanov 6 minutes a night and playing Lehtinen 8-9 minutes a night, you have enough throughout the rest of your lineup that even if they don't play great, you can overcome that, and they're still getting in, so their agents are happy and they're still happy. But I wonder at what point, if you feel like those guys just aren't good enough or aren't contributing the way you want them to at the NHL level, do you just say, all right, we gave this a shot, we don't want to alienate them, but we have to put forth the best roster we feel like can win us games and get us to where we want to go?
Right, and I would bet that the organization has a date in mind and they're just not telling us, right? Like, these are essentially tryouts that have entered into the regular season because there was no preseason. This is the experimentation phase, and Toronto has kind of been gifted with a bit of a longer experimentation phase because they're winning, because when you look at the standings, they're not in panic mode. If they were below 500, maybe we wouldn't be seeing this, right? Like, I think if there was a playoff game tomorrow, it would the sense I get would be Dermott would be in that spot. Lehtinen wouldn't. Barabanov would be in the press box. So, you know, by winning games, you've kind of afforded your team a little bit more time to find out what you have in these players. The other thing is, you know, Lehtinen's only on a one-year contract. They also have to kind of evaluate and see, like, is this the kind of guy we want to invest in further? Or is he just going to walk out the door at the end of the season? So it's this balance of winning games versus talent evaluation. And I think that's what we're seeing in the early going here. And that could change when the stakes get higher.
Yeah, no, it's true. I'm really interested to see how the various teams in the North Division, not just the Leafs, but how they all kind of adjust as the season continues. Because yeah, we're only like what two and a half, three weeks into the season, into a shortened season. So it will be interesting to see what the long haul of roster movement and evaluation will be. We haven't really talked too much, Luke, so far at least, about Austin Matthews, and despite the loss, I'm tempted to say that last night might be, when you factor in his passing, shot attempts, etc., might be one of his more dominant games of the young season so far.
He hasn't had too many bad games. I've been really impressed, especially in the home games, because I've actually got to go watch in person, so you can kind of zero in on a player and watch their 200-foot game. For one, he has goals in 5 straight and points in 7 straight. And most of those contributions have been very timely, you know, responding right back after McDavid gets this otherworldly goal to get the Leafs right back in it. And his shooting percentage isn't even that good yet. Like, once it gets back to kind of his career norm, the points and goals should only climb. But what's really impressed me is he's using his body more. There's one game when the Oilers were in Toronto where he had 6 hits. And that would be more hits than he'd have in a month, a couple years back. He's using his body more. He's really dogged in the defensive end. He's coming back. He's not cheating the game. He is developing into that, you know, two-way center that the organization had kind of set the bar for him. You know, Brendan Shanahan was talking about that last year. Mike Babcock, when he was here, saw that in him and would show him clips of Jonathan Toews and Sidney Crosby. And, like, this is the kind of the standard you should shoot for. And as a young kid who scores every time he steps on the ice, he didn't need to be that. But this is, I think it speaks to just his hard work and his effort to try and develop into a more well-rounded player. He's not getting the easy goals. He's going back and getting the puck back and then helping drive play up ice. And I think he's actually been fantastic.
Luke Fox is with us. Yeah, it's hard to argue with, outside of maybe the game where he was I guess, nursing that hand injury, and he still found a way to score a goal, even though it wasn't, you know, kind of his conventional goal. I'm looking at Nylander and Tavares, and the point and goal totals are both there for both of them. You know, a lot of that was propped up by power play time. I still haven't been super impressed by what they've done at even strength at 5-on-5. What have you made of their, I guess, kind of inability to have the impact, certainly that we saw last year when they played together at even strength? Is it just, you know, they're still trying to find that chemistry with another line mate? How do you kind of make heads or tails of what we've seen from those two at 5-on-5?
Well, yeah, I think they've been good, but I think I agree that there's another level to get to. You know, maybe if Ilya Mikheyev finishes off a couple of golden chances, they even look better 5-on-5. I mean, he's missed some really good opportunities, just had some bad puck luck so far. I wouldn't be too concerned with them. You know, they're both averaging about a point a game still, and power play points still count. But, you know, that is an area of concern, not just with that line, but all the way up and down the lineup. Keith said last night is their 5-on-5 play. They haven't been dominant. They've kind of been relying on this power play that it's hard to, as good as it is, it's hard to imagine it keeping up at a 40% plus clip, right? So that's something that, you know, the Leafs are going to get a couple days off here, and then they're going to have two hard practice days leading up to their next game Thursday against Vancouver, where one of the focuses is going to be on that 5-on-5 play. Keith said they want more shots, less kind of, you know, floating around looking for the perfect play. Just start funneling some stuff towards the net, and make it, he sees that that's the area of improvement for the team, is being more dominant offensively 5-on-5, and I think that line in particular could take a step in that direction.